Now, on the issue of income, I have to say this, that, and this is also a message to brothers, that when a brother comes to propose marriage, right, and you begin to discuss the expectations for wedding and walima and honeymoon and all those kinds of things, you want to see that the brother regards this as something special that he should ideally have saved up for and should be willing to put some money into, based upon his socioeconomic status, right? So taking that into account, you want to see that this person, inshallah, is putting some thought and effort into this. So let me just say this. The wedding that a brother from a very wealthy family can provide is going to be very different from the wedding that a brother from a working class family can provide. Just accept that. And I think one of the mistakes that we make is kind of like keeping up with the, well, the Muslim version of the Joneses, right? Keeping up with the Khans or whatever. Just because that family, for example, had their wedding at a lavish hotel doesn't mean that that necessarily sets the standard for all Muslim weddings in that particular community. So I just really want to put that out there that we have to make sure that, you know, that we have to look at the expectations that each party brings in and understand that the type of event that's sort of conceived, that it really does sort of take into account what a family from this background can reasonably provide and what also makes it special, that based upon their background, what is special in their book, right? What is special or valuable in their culture? We need to think about that. And then related to that, sisters, I have to say there are also a few red flags, a few sticking points in this conversation that we do need to think about. So, and I would say that no matter what the brother's background is, if his idea of a wonderful honeymoon destination is Motel 6, you might want to move on. Now, theoretically, there's nothing wrong with Motel 6, but the point I'm trying to get across, sisters, is that you want some indication from the brother, no matter his background, that you are special to him, and the life that you foresee living together is worth investing in. And on that note, I have to say another thing too. A lot of going back to the conversation of mahr, sometimes we will tell ourselves that if I ask for a very, very, very humble mahr, it is indicative of my piety, right? And I've heard this from sisters that asking a brother for a mahr that we know is lowballing it and we know that he's able to do more, it just means we're both so pious, we don't even care about it. The mistake with that, though, and people will often cite the Sahaba when they talk about this. Well, problem number one, we're not the Sahaba. Problem number two, they lived in a pre-modern economy that was radically and drastically different from what we know today. And then a third point, sisters, is that, and this is no offense to the brothers, but sometimes if a man knows that he kind of got you on the cheap, sometimes it might dictate how he approaches things later on in the marriage. For example, if you need new furniture, or if you need clothing, or the children, you know, there's something that you need to pay for the kids, things that you want them to have, and you think they're really important for their development and their educational growth. But then he says, well, you know, remember our understanding when we first got married that, you know, we don't really need to be thinking about dunya. Okay, sisters, let me just say that to you, that you have to try to find the, you know, try to find the middle ground here between extravagance and just being ostentatious and lavish, and in a sense, sort of settling for too little, right? That no matter the brother's background, you want, again, you want to see some good faith signs that he believes that you and your future together are definitely worth investing in.